Okay, welcome to Discovery 2, Module 5, and soon to become Module 6. I know I said that a few minutes ago, but I want to trim that early bit off the lecture there. Okay, what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk a little bit more about what's in Chapter 5 and a little bit about what's in Chapter 6, but more specifically, we're going to talk about the methods and the ability to access the remote bundles and things. Now, who, if anybody, has connected to the remote bundle? Who even knows where the documentation to connect to the remote bundle is? Anybody?
Me, I have.
Not as yet.
Me too.
Dean knows all
Thanks,
about
mate.
It.
Yeah, look, Dean just has, he's just got a permanent link to the remote bundle. We've given him a leased line, that's how often he's on it, but yeah. Okay. Can anybody tell me, just to see how good your knowledge, where is the documentation on accessing the remote bundle? Can anybody tell me?
Let's have a look. I bet it's on QCAT.
Anybody want to have a guess?
General instructions.
Oh, bet it's on QCAT somewhere. I'll have a look.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's in general instructions. And why do you think it's in general instructions?
Because it's relevant to more than just one course.
That's exactly right. Okay. And now this is one of the... This goes to all the students, those who are connected and those who aren't connected. I realise you're all busy, and I realise you've all got lots of things to do, but you really do need to have a poke around QCAT.org. It is a site that you should be intimately familiar with, at least the state under student resources, and it's important to look at what basically is in the folders and find out exactly what is there, because we can't tell you about every single file on the website. Otherwise I should just get on there and just read a directory listing to you all, or get the Mac to do it. But it is important that you know where to find things, and if anybody has any suggestions for things to be moved, we can certainly do that. Like if you think, well, you know, we should have the documentation for accessing the remote bundle to also be under the Discovery folder, we can do that as well. And in fact, we probably will, but... okay, and can anybody tell me where you find TerraTerm?
In the extras.
And why is it in extras?
Of course, it's a bit of software that's used in more than one course, and it's an extra thing.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I could just call all the folders cat, dog, and cow and stuff, but we do have we do sort of want to keep the folders names understandable and followable. Now I'm just looking in general instructions. There's good stuff here. There's what have we got in here?
Link that off the homepage of the student resources page.
Yes, it is. There's links right up the top, and the first one there, I think, is general instructions. Actually,
found it. Yep, it is too. Okay, let's have a look.
There's some documentation on how to access the Cisco site, and how to access the curriculum with HAL. How to access the curriculum. Pictures of the pegboard. There's a HTML document on how to set up Ventrilo. There's some notes on TerraTerm, which are soon to be updated. Watch this space. That guide is going to get significantly better.
That draft you sent around last night was good. I read it.
Yeah, that's actually had some more updates applied to it by Graham, one of our ex-students, who's done a bit of grammar checking and spell checking. So that will certainly go up to date. And if anybody has any suggestions on the documentation, we're quite happy to incorporate those. We had considered putting up a wiki, but we just don't know how many of you are actually going to read it, and probably even less of you are going to edit it. Okay, there's a Ventrilo audio tutorial. Looks like I get to be proved wrong, actually. The information on accessing the remote bundle is actually under CCNA 2. So there you go. And the reason it's under CCNA2 and will soon be moved under Discovery2 is so that because CCNA2 was what we were running last time, and that's where you access the remote bundle. Also, the documentation on how to access the virtual machines and stuff is actually in the virtual machines area, so that the tutorials on setting up the virtual machines, the documentation for all the default usernames and passwords, and the information on how to get VMware server up and running. Now, I don't know whether anybody's noticed, but we are up to Module 5 of ITE. In fact, we've passed Module 5, and your first Linux labs are in Module 5. So time to get VMware up and running, people. You'll probably be one using the Fedora Core 7 virtual machine, or the Base Etch image. And if you use the Base Etch image, there are actually conversion notes in ITE 2 to allow you to convert the labs from Red Hat to Debian. I've actually converted the different locations and which packages you need to install. Is anybody up to the labs and workstations in Module 5 yet? I think Elise is getting close. This is for ITE.
Kerry, is it worth mentioning that they need to telnet into these images?
I'm getting to that. I'm trying to sort of segregate the ITE stuff from the CCNA, because the CCNA course doesn't actually require you to use a virtual machine. It's only the ITE that does.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I just thought it was worth a mention.
Okay. And Elise has left the server for some reason, which is probably why she didn't answer my question, which is completely understandable. Okay. Now, we're going to talk generally about accessing the remote bundle, because the new remote bundle is still in a state of disarray and needs to be fixed, and the rack mounts that we thought we had aren't the right rack mounts, so we're having trouble sticking the servers into the racks. You've just missed the fact that the rack mounts are wrong for the new bundle, and we're having to use the old bundle. The old bundle is accessible by telnetting to the IP address in the updated Accessing the Remote Bundle document, which is under CCNA2, and which will be copied into the Discovery area. It also, you need to telnet using TerraTerm. You need to telnet, not SSH, telnet. I think we've got the idea now. But
what's
it's really
that?
Important
because
if you're SSH and it won't work, you've got to telnet. That's right. I've often been bitten by the fact that, TerraTerm defaults to SSH, and if you try SSHing in, your connection to the remote bundle will fail. Now, there are two ways to get to the remote bundle. One of them is to put in the IP address, which is in that document that I can never remember. The other way is to telnet to the IP to the name cavibundle.ath.cx. Yes, I use dyndns.com as well. And cavibundle.ath.cx points at the remote bundle. And we're starting to get up to Module 5 now. Now, we're in a state where some of the labs will work because they're hands-on labs, and some of them require modification, the packet tracer labs. Now, students are going to have to look through the labs that will work and actually do the hands-on lab on the current remote bundle, if at all possible. And a lot of them are doable because they're just setting host names, setting passwords, powering up routers and things, and all that sort of thing. So it's now time to get practical. And it's going to take a few weeks for you guys to become comfortable with all this terraterming and terminal access. So I'd really encourage you to start dabbling with it, because we don't have a lot of this year left. Okay, things you should know about the remote bundle. The remote bundle has a 16-port serial switch connected to a series of devices, and all of this is documented in that document, which you'll all read, but some people seem to be allergic to reading documentation, so I'll tell you as well. What we have is we have two pods. Pod 1 is obviously the first pod. It has two workstations, two routers, and that's what it has. Three routers, does it? Okay, yeah, it has three routers, two workstations. Okay, I'm just checking this. Apparently Gemma's telling me that we have three routers and three workstations, and a workstation is connected to each router. Does that ring any bells with you, Dean?
Yeah, that's exactly the way it is. Then you've got the switch bundle as well.
Yep, but we haven't got into the switch bundle yet. Okay, so there are two pods, and we have three routers, three workstations, which gives us six, and we have two lots of that. When you are working in a pod, you need to be logged into Ventrilo and signed in to the pod channel that you are working on. So if you are working on pod 1, you should be in the pod 1 channel. If you are using pod 2, you should be in the pod 2 channel. If you are using the switch bundle, you are going to be in the switch bundle channel. If you are not, somebody is going to walk over the top of your carefully crafted configurations and reload the routers while you're not looking.
So we check on Ventrilo first to make sure no one's already in there, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And perhaps if somebody is already in there and they're working on the same lab you're working on, perhaps you can work with them.
Woohoo! Well, can two people be logged in there at the same time? Yes, they can.
Yes, there is a limit. You know, do you happen to know off the top of your head what the connection limit to the serial switch is? I seem to remember it being something around 5. Anybody, do you remember if there is a connection limit, Dean? I seem to remember something around 5 or something.
Can only have, I thought it was only 3, to be honest with you.
Okay, so if it is 3, you're going to have to cooperate. But you can have 3 incoming connections open to the serial bundle. And once you are open to the serial bundle, you can actually disconnect and reconnect to the different ports and bounce your way between the different ports. So you're not going to be able to have all the ports open at once, and like, you're not going to be able to have, you know, 5 different TerraTerm windows open. You are going to have to multiplex the connections.
If no one's on, of course, you can use 2 connections, which is quite handy sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. If there is availability, you're certainly welcome to use 2 connections. But it is vitally important that you are in the pod channel or the switch bundle channel that you're going to use. And it is vitally important that you check to make sure that nobody else is using the bundle. If somebody is going to walk away from the bundle for an extended period of time, you are encouraged to save your configurations, and you will learn how to do that as part of Module 5. And you are encouraged to save your configurations, because if nobody is in a bundle for a while, it is quite possible for a student to whisp through one of the routers that you were using and reload it and reset it to factory defaults, and that will be the end of your configuration. Okay, so on a pod you have 3 routers. and 3 workstations. The routers are Cisco series routers. There's some 2600 series routers and there's some 2800 series routers, depending on which pod you are working on. This is an important point because the serial interface on one set of routers is serial 0/0, serial 1/0, etc. And the serial interfaces on the other set of routers are serial 0/0/0, etc. This means you cannot move a configuration file from one pod to another without making changes to it. Can anybody tell me, and I think I covered this last week, apart from Dean who already knows, how would you find out what the names of the serial interfaces were if you connected to a router on a particular pod? Embarrassing question number 604. Has anybody read Chapter 5 in Discovery?
Certainly have.
That's tonight and this weekend's job to read the whole thing from 1 to at least 5 or 6, and I've been very remiss because I've been busy with work and busy with IT2, sorry.
No, I understand that.
I haven't.
This is one, I mean, no. This is a general comment to everybody. Just be careful, because if you concentrate too much on one subject, you won't get the other one done. And whilst ITE might be more fun, CCNA and Discovery pays more money.
I hear you, Terry. No, that's good. In actual fact, I was going to ask you, are you still able to enable the exams for CCNA1?
I certainly can, and nobody has made any requests.
I'm making one. So, because I went in there the other day and thought I might do a couple, and because I was in the exam mood and I'd just done a couple of IT ones, I thought, I'll see if there's any there, and they weren't, and I've been meaning to ask you for a couple of days.
No, we can certainly activate IT1 and CCNA1 exams. Those courses are still active. I was activating them on a weekly basis, but if I do that, it's all very convenient for you lot, but I have no idea of knowing who took what exams and when. So I've actually been put the activation on an on-demand basis, and then once I get asked, I usually activate everything for a week from when somebody asks.
Yes, I noticed Geraldine reactivated her lot yesterday, so I was going to sit down and do them this afternoon and over the weekend.
No, fair enough. And look, I'm certainly not picking on you specifically, at least it's a general comment. If you concentrate on one subject too much, the other one will fall by the side.
Which is really what happened with CCNA1 for me. So really, and then I'm going to make a full-on assault on subnetting. It's like I'm going to sit down one day and go, right, I want to know, and I'm going to get on that website and go, I want to know everything there is to know about subnetting.
The other thing to keep in mind, and we keep saying this quite regularly every few weeks, and some of you take us up on this offer and some of you don't, if you pre-arrange with us, and I underline the word pre-arrange, even if that pre-arrangement is via email, 15-20 minutes beforehand or we set a time, we will make ourselves available on Skype or Ventrilo, and we will help you with your problems and your course questions and your course problems, and we'd be happy to explain things to you. And I assume, and I won't put my hand up for you, Dean, but I assume there's a possibility that if there was sufficient demand, you might be able to jump on once in a while as well to help some students occasionally.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't be a problem. It's in between studying and whatnot, I can help them with the remote bundle and whatnot. While we're talking about the remote bundle, common courtesy when you're finished your configuration is to clear it for your fellow students.
Yes, that's right. The other thing you need to know about the remote bundle is that the enable password is Cisco and the enable secret is class.
Yeah, thanks, guys. No, I will take both of you up on that offer with the subnetting and maybe Dean for the remote bundle one time, maybe even over the weekend. Let me have a look at learntosubnet.net or .com or whatever it is first. But I also make the same reciprocal offer for stuff that I already know too. If there's anyone out there who can pick on my brains, let me know.
Yeah, look, it's very important that we all work together on these courses, and I'm waving at India here. I'm waving very heavily at India here. Please use the resources that are available to you. You are not an island. You do not have to do it all yourself, and there will be things you won't understand and you will need explained to you. Yes, if you want me on the remote bundle or on the Ventrilo at 10 o'clock at night, no problem, but you just have to pre-arrange it with me, or I won't, because I've got better things to do as far as, you know, eating dinner and sleeping and things. But we are happy to jump on, if pre-arranged, and help you guys, because this is a cooperative learning environment.
Yeah, and that's no problem. True in all the subjects. You know, we're very happy to help you. That we not mind readers when you want help, so you've just got to chuff us off an email, we'll jump on, and happy to help.
Kerry, I'll post my Skype name onto the discussion list for the students if they want it.
Okay, and probably just a point that, you know, not to abuse, and I'll post a general etiquette thing about not to abuse that, because we did have a case where some students were extensively using Skype instant messaging rather than email, and I don't know whether I'm alone in this, but I find that a little Skype instant message landing on my desktop, well, I find MSN's the same, really disrupts my train of thought from time to time. With email, you can decide when you're going to make yourself available.
Yeah, I post both on Skype and email addresses for the ones who want to use it.
All right, so we'll certainly cover that. Now, what else was I going to say? Is the person I want to talk to on at the moment? Ah, yes. Ruby, you probably want to talk to Geraldine and I later on Skype if you possibly can, or a day that suits you. There were some things you wanted to talk to us about, that you mentioned something on Wednesday, or have you already spoken to Ruby, Geraldine?
No, still got to talk to Ruby.
No, that's okay. We just want to talk to you. You're not in trouble. We'd like to help you. So you're not in trouble.
I'll talk to you.
But it would be good. Yeah. No, just talk to us. Talk to us a bit later, maybe after lecture or a day that suits you. When we're bouncing around on Skype, we can certainly chat to you and see if we can help you with some of the problems you might be experiencing. That often is not just open to Ruby, that's open to anyone. If you need a hand with something, we will clarify it. We will, however, assume that if it's a course-related question as far as information in the notes, we will have expected you to have read the notes first. And then we'll answer and clarify any questions. There's no point asking us questions on notes you haven't read. That's what these lectures are for, and the notes, obviously. Okay, now just finishing off this stuff on the remote bundle. So you set up TerraTerm using the survival guide that we have provided, and that survival guide will be updated on a regular basis to include all of the handy-dandy information. You will need to grab TerraTerm from the extras folder off QCAT.org. That's TerraTerm from the extras folder from QCAT.org. You will also need the JAWS script, and you will need to compile the JAWS script. Now, there are instructions in the new survival guide on how to compile a JAWS script. Quick question. How many students are familiar with how to use Windows help files? Or should I be asking how many students aren't? I'd depend.
I'm assuming I'm back with audio and everything.
Yes, you are.
You are.
Yeah. No, going through fine.
You're obviously familiar with Windows help files, Dean, given that Ciscopedia is one of your good friends.
Oh no, I love Ciscopedia. It's full of pertinent information.
Yeah, thanks, Dean. I did get that last week.
Okay.
Oh, good. Did you get the samples I sent you?
Yeah, I haven't gone all the way through it, but I did get them. Thanks.
Okay. Now, CHM files, or compressed, they're actually compressed HTM archives. They've got like HTML and GIF files in them. And I don't know whether it interests anybody, but you can actually use 7-zip to actually pull all of the files out of a .chm file, if that sort of thing interests you.
Hmm.
Also worth noting that 7-zip supports CAB and a whole lot of other archive formats, but you can look all that up on 7-zip.org, and that's not really relevant here. But a CHM is a compressed archive of help text, and it is an HTML set of HTML documents with graphics and links. If you don't know how to use Windows Help by now, you really should. One of the best resources for JAWS, and believe me, you're going to get your hands very dirty with JAWS this semester, one of the best resources for JAWS is its help files. And if you don't know how to access them, you are really at a disadvantage. And the same goes for WindowEyes, so don't think of switching to WindowEyes just because you want to be able to access the... not have to use help files. Did anybody get the links that I posted to the text versions of the JAWS documentation yesterday on List?
Oh, absolutely. There was something like 1 for 6.1789.
Yep, certainly did.
Good. I downloaded a couple of them and read them. I started reading.
Okay, now nobody expects you to read all of the documentation of JAWS. You get the zip file and you press enter on it. And then when the zip file opens in Windows Explorer, which it will, there's files, and you just hit enter on the file and they open up in Notepad. It's really that simple.
I didn't bother getting them out of the zip. I could have copied them out, but unless whoever that person is isn't running XP or has installed WinRAR, which takes over the association for zip.
Yeah, make sure Samuel hasn't dropped WinRAR on your machine, Ruby, because that can make your life more complicated than it needs to be.
Can be fixed very easily.
Sure it can, and I don't know how you fix it, but I'm sure I could work it out.
Same as the associations for any other file, Kerry, just go into the view options in Windows and set the zip association back to... you just take it off WinRAR.
Ah, yes. And do you actually have to tell...
Maybe I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, that's good. Sorry, maybe Dean, you can give her a hand to do that. Yeah, I was going to say, do you have to stop WinRAR from stealing the association back?
Yes, I think I actually do tell a slight lie. I think I actually went into WinRAR. In actual fact, it might be on this cat. Let me have a look. Yes, you tell WinRAR not to steal it back. I seem to remember being in that dialogue box at 1.2.
7-zip. Got WinRAR supported in anyway.
Yeah, apparently it has a problem with certain multi-volume RARs, although I haven't actually experienced the problem. Has anybody noticed here that although we're whizzing through these courses, there's actually a lot of basic computer information and stuff that we actually don't cover and you all don't know how to do? So is anybody interested in long-term, and I underline the word long-term, in an intermediate computer course to fill in all the gaps? Because the first thing we need is student interest, and the second thing we need is obviously funding, but I'm just seeing here that there's a lot of things that people just don't seem to know how to do, and you are expected to have intermediate computer skills before you jump into these things, sadly.
Yeah, we've both thought that would be a really good idea, and I know I spoke to you, Elise, about that briefly the other day. But yeah, for anyone else who's interested, that's something that we would really like to see happen, a pre-say ITE 1, CCNA 1 course.
I think there's a lot to be said for something like that.
Course support would be it'd be good.
One of the things that happens is that you get somebody, and I'm sure we can think of a few names without mentioning any, who get computers, and one of my relatives is one, and it's, somebody just gives them the computer, or they get the computer, and they might show them a few things, and you end up with a person who's been with the computer for a long time, maybe several years even, with a lot of gaps in their knowledge, because they simply just don't know to press Control-Escape instead of the Windows key, or they just simply don't know that... Alt will light up the menus, as I put it, and things like basic things like that.
I think we, as I said, we don't need to mention any names, but I think we've had an example of that pop up this morning, and quite an understandable example because people haven't had to do these things before. Now, I think I gave access to an internet tutorial, and some of you guys couldn't get access to it. Okay, so what I'm going to do with that, and I've just remembered this. Yeah, the light's just gone on. Jolly good. Look, I don't think I'm going to get to a lot of Module 5 and 6 today, but I think all this stuff is actually quite important, so we'll get through what we can. But I'm going to put that up on the QCAT website, that internet tutorial, because there was some interest expressed in that, in the free internet tutorial that the guy released to the public domain. Because another thing I'm seeing is that students don't know how to use their JAWS quick keys in Internet Explorer, and they don't know really how forms mode and stuff works. They've sort of got a basic idea, but the advanced bits of Internet Explorer are still unknown to them. There is also the tab brigade that navigate the internet by pressing tab and wonder why their focus jumps over things like the go button, which is obviously not very cool. So maybe that internet tutorial can alleviate some of that. And I think students would have found that... the other thing is Insert F7 doesn't pull up buttons, which I've covered before. But students have probably found that they've sort of got the baptism of fire regarding Internet Explorer. And they've probably learnt more about surfing the internet in the last 8 to 9 months than they ever have previously, purely out of necessity.
I've often said to people...
No, you guys taught me a lot last year.
It teaches you to research. That's what I often say about this course. You really learn to learn. You really, if your researching skills weren't terribly good on the net beforehand, come to a CAVI course. They will be by the time you're a fraction of the way in.
And
but that's another thing. You've got to also put the effort in as well.
To work on.
Sorry, Terry, what was that?
Dean's correct. You do have to put the effort in, and there is a hell of a lot of work involved in these courses, and we say that a lot, but there still is, and there is a lot of work. But if, for example, you are having trouble with your research skills and stuff, listening to the Thursday chats on how to research, and the accessing the internet with JAWS, I think we covered a lot of good hints there. And the other thing that's an excellent resource is... Yeah, the other thing I was going to say was we also have the basic training that comes with JAWS is also insanely good. Anyone ever listened to that? I've listened to bits of it, although I've been using JAWS since 1999, so I haven't actually listened to a huge amount of it, but Dan certainly tells you a lot of things that are quite interesting.
No, not as yet.
I'm finding it extremely helpful.
I would, just so I can get those birds in for Chris.
There we go. I hate you, Gary.
I know you do. I would strongly suggest that if you can, get the JAWS basic training. And I'd also suggest it as a resource for Yvonne, at least once you get the computer working again. That basic training is gold. Yes. It really is. And
thank you. Yes, that looks like it's going to be a...
And the good thing... Yeah, it's sad when that happens. It's a bit of a pain when that happens.
It'll be going back with Linux on it as well, don't you worry. And images, you watch.
Absolutely. You wouldn't be happy unless you had a pet cat or three.
No, I need a pet cat or three, I think. Even if it means putting a bigger hard drive in it. There's a few spare hard drives around here, don't you worry. And maybe some USB one as well.
Yeah, probably a good idea. Okay, so... A lot of key stuff covered there, and we hope that's going to be somewhat useful to you all, and maybe it will cause you to think of some questions. As I said, keep in mind we don't have an intermediate course at this stage, and because of that we don't provide a lot of JAWS help, so we are going to point you at existing resources if they exist, just because it cuts down the amount of work we have to do. We've got lab manuals and things to modify and worksheets to mark and all that sort of thing. So if there is existing information, we are going to point you at that information rather than directly answer your question. Also, people should know about pressing Insert F1 key F1 or Jaws 1 twice quickly inside an application. That will bring up the context-sensitive help for that particular application. Want to know how to use Jaws with Internet Explorer? Crack open Internet Explorer, Insert F1 twice quickly. Want to know how to use Firefox? Open Firefox, Insert F1 twice quickly. Or Jaws key F1 if you're using, say, laptop layout, that will mean it will be caps lock instead of insert, or you can use either. Want to know how to use PowerPoint? Open up PowerPoint, Insert F1 twice quickly. In fact, if my memory serves me, that's how Gemma learned how to use PowerPoint with Jaws. Why are you pressing Insert F1 twice quickly? Because Insert F1 once will actually tell you what sort of control you're sitting on and how to interact with it. So, for example, if I press Insert F1 now, it'll say this is an edit field. You can type into the edit field or use Jaws keys to modify the information in the edit field. And this is one of the things that really, and it may change in Windows version 7, but one of the things that really sets Jaws apart from Windows at this point is Windows has an excellent manual in multiple formats. But Jaws has the most mind-bogglingly array of context-sensitive help and embedded help documentation. All right, does anybody have any questions before we go on?
Gary, the audio for lectures 3 and 4 weren't up the other day, but the lecture 5 part 1 was up there.
I actually posted to announce about this, Dean, I understand if you missed it. Module 3 contains modules... Module 2 contains modules 2, 3 and 4.
Oh, okay, sorry.
No, that's okay. A couple of people have asked about that. I think I actually renamed that file, or if I haven't, it's actually going to get renamed today to CCNA Discovery 2 Module 2-4.mp3. Because I actually handled two of the smaller modules inside of one lecture.
Yeah, it's funny because I've gone through it. Anyway, not to worry.
I'll have a look, Dean, because I'm interested, because I'm pretty sure I did cover modules 3 and 4, because it talked about IP addresses and subnet masks and things, and I do remember doing subnet masks at the end of that. But if it's missing from the recording, we need to know. So I'll resync the mirror I've got here and take a look.
It's all right, I'll listen to it again and I'll let you know if it's anything different.
I'm just going to drop my sensitivity a bit because it's just triggering... actually, I've got to raise my sensitivity, I think, because it's just triggering a bit too easily.
Sensitive,
talk amongst
Kerry.
Yourselves or Geraldine can sing. That'll be the day.
Sing a song, sing out loud, or don't sing at all. Bye-bye.
Okay, I'm back.
I was going to comment on something, actually.
Yes, by all means.
I was listening to ITE 2, Chapter 7, I think it was, yesterday, while I was working, and there seemed to be a lot of discussion. I don't know whether it was just off the beaten track, because I actually haven't read the notes for that chapter yet, but... there was a lot of discussion about Windows 2K, and in it was a lot of, this is your, what you did last year, discussion about how to do these things like getting around with Jaws and getting onto the desktop and system tray, etc., 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 I think was mentioned in last year's version of that chapter.
Yeah.
Chapter, whatever the Windows NT chapter is, so Windows 2000 chapter is it 8 or 7? I think it's actually 8. It's actually 8, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, look, that's probably a good point, actually. One of the things to keep in mind is that we don't always think of the same things to go through each year. And now that you've mentioned that, we'll try and remember to go back through that in Module 8 as well. We have told people to listen to last year's lectures, and whilst that gives you twice as much stuff to listen to, it probably also gives you about maybe not twice as much information, but probably probably about 70% more information.
Yeah, because last year's people think, well, I just can't go forward in time and get this year's lectures, but we can go back in time and get theirs.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'd really encourage people to listen to last year's lectures if they can, because we had a lot more people with working microphones and a lot more chatty people, although this year's group is certainly catching up on last year's, so we'll certainly give them a run for their money, but a lot more people, a lot more interactive in the lecture setting. And a lot of tete-a-tete and discussion went on in last year's lectures, people bringing up interesting points, and we had some very knowledgeable people who brought up keyboard shortcuts that I didn't know. For example, pressing Windows B will land you on the taskbar.
I'm sorry, Windows what, B?
Yeah, I think so. Let me see.
Put me on the system tray.
Ah, yes, it is the system tray. Yeah, that's right.
But that'll be handy for Yvonne, because I haven't even taught her insert F12 yet. Insert F11 yet, because she knows the system tray is there, but, you know, I've got to be careful how much I present in any one time.
Well, this is also one of the things we're also finding. When you do these courses, a lot of students suffer from information overload. Just because we have so much to tell you and so little time to tell it to you in.
It's, please don't teach me anything new before so-and-so comes over, because my brain's overloaded, quote-unquote.
Yes, yeah, and that is certainly a problem. And if that is indeed the case, and we think it might be a case for a lot of students, can you please email the instructors and say so? That doesn't mean we're going to do anything about it, just so you know, but at least we'll know, and we can provide that as feedback to the powers that be. Let's hope that was diplomatic enough.
That was good. In actual fact, with somebody like my auntie's case, and I'm sure she won't mind me mentioning this, I don't know whether this applies to maybe people who are offshore of Australia, but I had to teach my auntie basic keyboarding. And is still teaching her basic keyboarding. So in the 2 months that she's got, that she's had the computer, let's say, she has had a massive brain dump. And I really take my hat off for her being gutsy enough to do it. And often there's people out there who, we take a lot of what we do for granted, because we've been playing with JAWS, as Kerry said, since 1999, and we've all been in computers for varying lengths of time. But there's probably people out there who are relatively new, and brain overload is a very real possibility, even when we don't think it is.
Absolutely. And I think, and this is just a general statement, if some students think the workload is too high, well, yes, it is, we know it's too high, but that's just the way it is, but you might want to concentrate on one course rather than both courses, because maybe one course will suit you better than the other courses. I mean, obviously, there are the powerhouses there. We've got Eddie there who keeps the old hamster running at 100 miles an hour, who's doing quite well there, and quite a number of other students that also do an excellent job, Elise and Dean and stuff, that do both courses. Maybe some people would like to pick one of the courses and concentrate on that course. Although I think I'd be fair in saying, Eddie, that you are doing extremely well, but these courses certainly take a hell of a lot of time, don't they?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, so something for students to think about.
But you've
got
to put the effort in to get the effort out of it.
That's right.
Peter just made a comment too. He hasn't got a mic at the moment, but he said it's very important to have good time management skills if you're going to do both too.
Very definitely.
And Geraldine did a lecture on study skills in the Thursday chats, so people might want to listen to that one too.
Yeah, from the perpetual student here.
Yeah, well, she's the one who decides she's doing a whole uni degree in 10 minutes or something, so, well, and, you know, no help for you, I don't think, Geraldine.
Come on, 15 minutes.
You've done well, Geraldine.
Oh, sorry.
I've only completed a master's in 9 months.
So
yeah, very good.
She's got a memory like an elephant. She bears no other resemblance to an elephant, but she has a memory like one.
I'm glad you clarified that.
I thought I'd better.
Maybe it's her age group. I have a friend who's very much like that, a very good memory, and she's a sighted person.
Excellent.
Alrighty. She's rival most blindies.
Sorry, I'm just waiting for lecture to shift out of the room here because she just received a phone call. Okay, so I think that is the general administrative stuff we were going to cover. But I think, you know, that's all probably pretty important stuff, and we did try to tell people all of this earlier on in the year, but often it's not until the reality and the panic sets in that people know what we're on about.
It's been a pretty big year.
Absolutely, it is. It is going to be a big year. It's not to terrify you all into hiding under the blankets, but it's only going to get harder. And there's an incredible amount of labs in CCNA Discovery and ITE too. And it's a lot more full on than the first half of the year.
A lot more fun, though.
Yeah, so I'm lucky to say I'm not
absolutely
the IT2s now, I hope.
No, actually, the heavier labs are in module 6 and onwards. So you might be halfway through the numbers, but you're not halfway through the labs.
I just started 6 today.
Was there a there was a lab in Module 5 on NIS, wasn't there?
NIS?
Yeah, NIS, setting up a NIS client, NIS client.
No, the only lab I got...
Not in 5.
There was not in 5, no, it was all... You're talking IT?
Mm-hmm, yeah, talking IT.
Yeah. I did use both my virtual machine for the first time, for what it's intended to, the Linux virtual machine, and... looking into Mind Server, and it was just really an exercise into looking under what's under slash etc slash sysconfig.
Ah, yes, and you'll want to be using the Fedora virtual machine for that lab in IT Module 5.
You do, yeah. There are a number of files it mentioned that weren't there on that app.
Yeah, they have moved around and stuff, so we'll work on that and tell you what they are. I'm going to try and organise this. Yeah, Google is good. Next Thursday, as in the Thursday coming up, if I can organise it, we're going to have a talk from a blind person who is working at Cisco.
That'd be good.
Is that Sean?
Yeah, we're going to get Sean on.
Is he in Australia or offshore somewhere?
Sydney.
He's in North Sydney.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Let me know, because I have an engagement on Thursday, which I could put off if I know early enough.
I'll get in touch with Sean and see if he wants to drop in and do the Thursday chat on this Thursday coming. But there was a position going in the Cisco call centre in North Sydney, and he was in a position to be able to take that position. He was between jobs, and he now works for the TAC team, which is the Technical Assistance Centre.
So it doesn't sound level one-ish at all.
It's not.
That's the sort of call centre that would be all right to work in.
Well, there is some level one stuff, but there is also some quite high-level networking stuff. And, I mean, Sean had been working for Ursys for the last 4 or 5 years, I think, or the last couple of years anyway, and they were doing some quite advanced Linux and network routing. So quite a challenge. Alrighty, so let's get back into these modules that these notes that I've got here. Sadly, we've sort of gotten a bit sidetracked, but probably quite informative. Okay, now once you've connected to the remote bundle, and of course you'll all be going off and trying to set that up this week, won't we? Those who are... Now, the other thing I've got to... Actually, no, I've just got one more thing to mention now that I think of it. Try not to put off things because you're scared. Sometimes you've got to get TerraTerm installed and get the JAWS script compiled and stuff, even if you don't think you're going to be up to the labs until the week or two after next. It can be worthwhile looking through something while everybody else is going through it, rather than having to ask the question 3 or 4 weeks down the track when everybody's moved on and they're all setting up RIP and turning off CDP. Okay, anyway, so now we're continuing on with the rest of Module 5. And I'll just call this 5 Part 2 or something. That'll be fine, with a note to the effect that there's a lot of intro chat on here. Alright, you need to set up your hostname on your router. And can anybody tell me what the router prompt in, apart from Dean, who knows far too well what the prompt is, anybody else tell me what the prompt on a Cisco router is when you are in privileged exec mode? Anyone? You should have seen this, Mr. Leg.
Is it a dollar sign?
No. No, close. That's when you're in user exec mode. What's the one in privileged exec mode? I'll give you a hint. It's similar in Unix.
The hash.
Yep. And can you, any recollection of what comes before the hash when you're looking at a router prompt? Because it's not just a hash. You want to tell us, Dean? You're probably busting out of your chair by now.
For God's sake, read the notes. Yeah, it's just the name of the router.
Yes, the host name of the router. The host name. And can anybody tell
Is
me
that
why...
Does that feel better, Dean?
Oh, I was going, ooh.
Can anybody tell me why it puts the host name up on the prompt? So, like, it'll say GAD number, or BHM number, or PHX number.
So you know what router you're working on.
A bit like a Linux machine telling you what machine you're on, I suppose.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah, so, you know, if it says GAD number...
Between two Linux machines.
It certainly does. It certainly does. And this is very important that you know which router you're working on, because if you put the wrong commands into the wrong router, you can often shoot yourself in the foot. And there's nothing worse than putting a shutdown command onto the wrong interface in the wrong router and locking yourself out of a network at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon and knowing that nobody's going to be in at work until Monday the next morning. And Monday after that. Not that I've ever done that, mind you, a couple of times. And I think this really underscores... I've done it lots, actually. I've done it about 3 or 4 times. But one of the things you've really got to keep in mind when you are working with routers, and if this scares you silly, then, well, it shouldn't on the remote bundle, but once you're working in a production environment, it probably should. You must be careful what you're doing and understand the ramifications of the commands you are going to key in. Because if you mess somebody's router up, not only are you going to have to fix it, but you also may have to explain to your customer why they've had an unintended network disruption.
Oh, I know all about network disruptions.
Yes, a thing that happened to Geraldine recently. A particular person who will remain nameless, but it wasn't Geraldine, installed a thing onto their network called Network Magic.
Yep.
I think that's what it was called, and it made a mess of everything.
Had to reconfigure everything.
No kidding.
Not happy.
I'm interested to go and have a look at what that actually does.
Yes.
Obviously, apart from ruin your network.
Are we talking about a Linux or a Windows network here, or what type of network?
Windows.
Windows network. Yep.
What was it supposed to do, Gary?
We don't know.
You never got a chance to find out.
I didn't know it was being put onto the network.
Is this a home network or a little work office one?
Yeah, home.
Home one, yeah. But, I mean, look, even still, I mean, some people would, and that is a valid question, Elise, but now that people are relying on the internet and YouTube and Facebook, especially when boredom sets in, some sometimes the home network can be as important to the people in a house as perhaps the work network is to the people at work.
Oh, definitely.
Especially when you've got three children running around.
Or you're studying, yeah, depending on internet access too.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so that's all good. Yeah, all right. What time is it? I'm going to have to zap off for 30 seconds, guys. I drank a cup of coffee that I shouldn't
have. Awesome.
Can you explain, you could sing, or perhaps Dean could talk about what an enable password is and what an enable secret is, and I'll be back in about a minute or so.
That sounds more interesting.
Your enable password doesn't put encryption on it, where an enable secret puts, I think it's MD5 encryption on the password.
So these bundles then, Dean, would they be using one or t'other means of, because obviously
it depends on what you put into it.
Oh, right.
Because the bundles, when you first log into the remote bundles, there's no configuration on them until you put it into it.
Right.
And then, of course, once you've configured it, and that's important to save your log files. No,
going to suggest.
I was just asking Dean, because you're just breaking up on the transmit a little bit, unless it's just my incoming stream here. But it's not fatal. You just are breaking up a little bit.
No one's. But son's computer's on. He might have a torrent running, but I'm not sure. I'll have to go and check.
We'll manage. It's okay. So you're going to make a suggestion, Elise?
Yeah,
I've just been beaten to the loo, by the way, which is why I haven't gone yet.
that's still good, because I was going, depending on how long Terry was away and how long and how if Dean's up to it. Imagine I'm sitting in front of a Teraturn screen, but it's SSH and into Challenger. If I was sitting in front of a Teraturn screen, maybe you could just take us through the steps of what should happen, so that when I get up to it over the weekend, I know what to expect. If I start up Teraturn and type what, and just the first few steps of what might happen when we to access a remote bundle, a bit like a practical demonstration.
Do you want to have a sort of a talk, a brief 5-second talk about that, Dean? I'll be back in about a minute or so. The resource has now been freed up.
Yeah. You don't cross your legs, man. When you first log into the router with your IP address, you'll be challenged with a password to go into each of the bundles. Once you're in the bundle, you then log on to the router or workstation with a /C and the number of the router or workstation. And once you're in, say, the router as an example, you then proceed to put in your configuration and save it with your copy running config to startup config. Because otherwise, if you don't and you reboot the router, your configuration's gone.
So when you say save,
it is also important when. There's a, because you're using the command line interface, you type at the, in global configuration mode, copy running config to startup configuration.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that it's saved into NVRAM. So that if the if the router's rebooted for some reason, that it's saved into NVRAM. And once you've configured, say, the three routers, if you're doing one of the labs that requires three routers, you can telnet between the routers, which is one of the things that you'll have to do in one of the labs. And once you've finished doing your exercise, as a common courtesy, clear the router or workstation that you're working on so that it's free and ready for the next student to use.
Sure. Now, these workstations, are they actually physical workstations or virtual machines that are sitting there running as workstations? And what are those workstations?
It's one, I think there was, most of them are virtual machines.
I'm back, by the way. Yeah, all of them.
What are they, what are on them? Like, have they got Linux or Unix or something? What are we telling into? If
they're all Linux machines.
Yep. Oh, that's very good. Thank you, Dean. Just something what to expect when we do this, and that's good. Thank you.
No, that's excellent, and I have no idea what he just said, but I'm sure it was excellent, so there you go.
It was.
Excellent. Now, just one of the things that I do want to mention to people is a lot of people, when we say there are virtual Linux machines on the bundle, they go, and sort of want to run away, petrified. Can anybody suggest a reason why we have virtual Linux machines on the bundle? And no, Dean, you're exempt, and you're probably exempt as well, Elise.
Yes, I think I do know.
No, that's not the reason, actually, dear.
Can I have a go?
You can have a go. The question is why we're using Linux as the operating system, not the fact that they're virtual.
I understand that. Because there's no licensing issues, I would imagine. And you can have as many there as you want.
That's part of the reason. Can anybody think of another reason why we'd be using Linux?
It's a lot more stable.
Yeah, Gemma's come up with the right answer, but anyone else? Because she did the course last year.
It's free, woot.
Yes, it's free, woot. But think simple, people. One more reason. You're sitting in front of a terminal emulator. Why are we using Linux?
Because it puts us on an equal footing.
I'm thinking even simpler. The answer I wanted was because it's a command line text-based interface.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's what I was referring to.
And because it's a command line text-based interface, it works in a terminal emulator, either Hyperterminal, TerraTerm, SecureCRT, MS Kermit, Kermit for Windows, any of those terminal emulators. And it doesn't matter whether you are sitting
Putty.
In the next room, or Putty doesn't work well with speech, Chris.
Just go with TerraTerm and use the strength.
If you want to be using Putty because you can see the screen and you can blow the fonts up to 326 point, that's up to you. But we don't suggest people use Putty, even if it is cool, because it does not work well with JAWS.
Just for Chris's
interest, I used it once and didn't like it, so just throwing it out there anyway, just for the sake of mentioning something and make it look like I'm paying attention.
Thank you. Oh, that sounds good. Just for Chris's attention, for partially sighted people, you can blow the fonts up. I've got them running larger, and change the colours in TerraTerm, which is what I've done for myself.
Yes, and I have done that also.
Yes, you are correct. Putty is a very popular terminal emulator, and it's free, which is why people like it. So it's TerraTerm. And it's quite good for sighted or partially sighted people, although it doesn't work particularly well with speech, which is why we have TerraTerm and the JAWS script. And the reason you want the JAWS script, and I mean, people may ask, why do I have to muck with the JAWS script, is because when the JAWS script is compiled and running, TerraTerm will automatically read what's scrolled onto the screen. Otherwise, you would have to use your JAWS cursor to cursor up and down the screen. And can anybody apart from Dean tell me, how do we tell if the JAWS script is installed and working when we're running TerraTerm?
There's a JAWS keystroke that does it, I think.
There is, but there is another easier way. When you Alt-Tab into the TerraTerm window, it reads the menu bar.
Yes,
so you get TerraTerm VT, File Edit, Window, Control, Help,
and you get also the prompt. I'm getting the Challenger prompt, hang on.
Saving your log files too is another really important thing when you're doing your webs.
We haven't got to that bit yet, but we can cover that in a second.
The JAWS script will read, when you alt-tab back to it, reads in my case the IP address of Challenger-TerraTerm-VT, and then, as Kerry said, the menu.
And as you look at commands and stuff, unless the text scrolls too quickly, which can happen unless you run things through a pager, TerraTerm will automatically read things as they come up onto the screen, which is mighty handy.
Yes, I find that very good.
The reason we haven't covered logs yet, Dean, is because it's actually covered as part of this chapter, and that's further down in the notes, so I was going to cover it when we get to it.
Yep, thank you, note.
Okay, the next thing I'm going to explain is a banner. There are two banners. I think I may have mentioned this briefly last week, but I'm just recapping it this week. There are two banners. One is the login banner, and one is the message of the day banner. Can anybody tell me the difference between Dean's temporarily exempt for 20 seconds, the difference between the login banner and the message of the day banner?
I suppose the login banner is usually a bit like what we used to see with Novell. It tells you that you're logged in, and maybe, and I'm just having an educated guess here, the message of the day banner might alert you to messages from the system administrator, maybe.
Yeah, you're partially right there. The login banner actually comes up when you are sitting at the login prompt. So, for example, if we're talking about the Red Hat equivalent, when you are sitting at a login prompt, the contents of /etc/issue are displayed first, followed by the login prompt. And then once you have logged in, the message of the day is shown, unless you create a file in your home directory called .hushlogin, which is a Unixy thing, but just so you know, you can actually suppress that message of the day.
Is the login banner those sorts of things that come up saying this computer system is for authorized personnel only, and logging in can land you in a lot of trouble?
That's essentially what the login banner should say, and it should say, nastily accessing computer will land you in jail for this long, and modifying data will land you in jail for this long, and we are watching you. Every step you take, every move you make, just to, take a parody of a Sting song there, and access by authorized personnel only, login. And there are a couple of things that the login banner shouldn't say. One of them is probably have a nice day, and the other one is welcome and hello and greetings unknown user, stuff like that. You don't want to be welcoming people at the login banner. The other thing you want for the and the message of the day, will talk about impending system maintenance, and it will also talk about things that users who have authorized access to the system should know, such as configuration changes that are going to upset them, or configuration changes that are going to make a difference to the way the network or the devices work.
In other words, from the system administrating type people.
That's exactly right. Now, the other thing we covered briefly last week was synchronous logging, and if you turn on synchronous logging, it stops the logs from interrupting your typing, and that can be very useful if log messages are popping up on the router and it's scrambling up what you're trying to type in into TerraTerm, so you may want to enable synchronous logging. Also, if you type in a command name that the Cisco iOS doesn't understand, it will attempt to establish a telnet session to a particular router. So, for example, if you type in SHOT instead of SHOW, the router will attempt to open a telnet connection to the host SHOT. And to do that, it will try and do a DNS lookup on the word SHOT or whatever mistype you've put in. And that takes significant time. Now, you can either belt Control-Shift-6 a few times until it decides to stop looking up the host name, but that gets rather tedious after you've... It's far more fun, according to Gemma in the background here. Or you can put in no IP domain-lookup in the privileged exec mode, in the configuration mode even, in the configuration mode, global config mode. And that will actually turn off that feature, which is quite useful. Can anybody tell me, once we have entered privileged exec mode, how do we get into global configuration mode? The command you would use is config space terminal. And can anybody tell me how we'd get out of it?
Exit.
End is actually what you want. Exit will work, And that will drop you back a level, but end specifically ends the configuration step and will actually get you out as well. Okay, now I'm going to sort of jump ahead here and mention logging because it is going to be important. When you are doing labs, and one of the things that you will need to do for CCNA2, and I think I've mentioned this in the past but I'll mention it again, is you have to keep a lab book. A lab book being a directory containing all of the labs that you've done, because we should be able to ask a student at any time to provide a copy of their lab book as it stands, in other words the labs that they have currently done, and you should be able to zip that up if that, or rather it's the sort of thing you're into, and send it to the instructors on request. The lab book will contain your labs, and it may optionally contain notes that you have taken that have assisted you to learn the particular modules, if you wish. You are allowed to include your notes in your lab book. And I think we probably want students to maintain a lab book for ITE2. Because you have sent us a lab does not mean that we're going to do our best, but we're not going to take infinite care of your labs and wrap them up in cotton wool. We do have disk crashes, as everybody else does, and it is up to the student to make sure that they have adequate backups of their own lab work. And just because you submitted it does not put it into a magic safe strongbox. You should keep your own copies, and if we don't have a copy of your lab, even if we lose it, and you can't re-provide it, we're going to assume you haven't done it.
Yeah, it's fair enough.
Aren't we awful people?
I just would have
thought. That's a good reference still, too.
Oh, absolutely.
I got some of my ITE, CCNA, early CCNA labs out when I was doing ITE 2.
Absolutely, and it's very important. A lot of students actually go through and they do CCNA 1 and ITE 1, and they go, phew, I'm glad that's over with. And then they go and do ITE2 and CCNA2, and they never ever look back at the coursework they did previously. And in fact, somebody asked me a question on the lists, and I luckily can't even remember who it was, so I can't dob them in. And that question was actually answered in CCNA1, and I actually told that student to go back and look at CCNA1 because that would be the best place to find the answer to that question.
I was even more thrilled when what I was writing in one worksheet correlated with what I wrote a few months ago in the other one. That was cool.
Oh, that's always good. And in those situations, provided that the original stuff was your own work, you can actually transpose that information from one worksheet to another.
I just lifted a whole heap of bullet points out of a Module 5 worksheet in IT today and stuck it in a Module 6. Because the question was the same, or something similar anyway.
Absolutely, but the cut and pasting does have to be your own work or your own research. Cutting and pasting things off Google and stuff is not cool, unless you are going to paraphrase it and stuff. We can all read Wikipedia too.
And reference it, stick the URL.
Absolutely, that's even better.
But sometimes, why do you? Well, you do type. I often paraphrase it, but if I do quote anything, I always let you know.
Okay, and I'm going to jump forward and mention this stuff that we were talking about a minute ago. Now, if you're going to do labs and you are going to keep a lab book, and you're going to keep a lab book if you want to pass this course, one of the things you will want to do is you will want to investigate TerraTerm's logging ability. Now, logging information means that the incoming information is saved into a text file. Can anybody tell me what is the default utility in versions of Windows that opens text files?
Da-da-da, Notepad!
Yes, and if you don't know how to use Notepad by now, you're going to learn how to use it in the next couple of weeks, because it's very, very good for editing text files and things.
It even works with JAWS.
It actually works exceedingly well with JAWS, and if it doesn't, you've got problems with your video chain, but that's one of the tests that you use. Actually, WordPad is the one we usually use to test that. Notepad works too. If you cursor around in Notepad and it doesn't work, you've got either video driver issues or video chain problems with JAWS, and if it goes blank, blank, or you've had a resolution change. Now, one of the things you've got to remember about JAWS is if you change the resolution on it and you apply the new settings without restarting, don't even bother, because JAWS ain't going to work anymore, and you'd better go and restart anyway.
Mm. Sometimes when JAWS gets the talks, I often go insert escape, which reloads the buffer.
That can work, absolutely, but it doesn't work if you've changed your resolution because you've upset the video chain, something chronic. Okay, now to log things, you go file, log.
We're talking about Terraterm. Dot, dot, dot.
Yes, we're talking about Terraterm, logging in Terraterm.
Right,
you go file, you go to the file menu, and you go log dot dot dot.
Yep.
Can anybody tell me what dot 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 means after something if you're in JAWS? Yeah.
I actually can.
Yeah, can you? What does dot 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 mean?
Okay, dot dot dot, when seen on a menu, is a set of ellipses. JAWS will tell you, you'll hear dot dot dot. An ellipsis means you'll get a dialogue box. And when a dialogue box occurs, you get a chance to either continue along your track and tab to an OK button, or do whatever the dialogue box wants you to, or you can opt out of a dialogue box.
Yeah, see, all of those things that people might not necessarily know. You'll have heard all these different things, but you won't know what dot 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 means. So if we hit enter on the log dot 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 thing, we can actually pick a file name, and you can call it terraterm.log, or you can call it terraterm.txt, or lab6.1.7.txt. And I think .log is actually associated with Notepad by default. Well, there's no labs that involve donuts, Mr. Legg.
I can quickly check that for you, Kerry.
All labs should include donuts.
And you can... That's, well, they don't, so build your bridge, and you can have donuts at lunchtime. And you can actually select where the file is going to be saved, and the default location for the file save is in Terraterm's program directory. Not very useful. You will want to change that.
Now, I'm assuming this log file gets appended every time I do something?
It certainly does.
Well, it's very handy. Thank you, Kerry. That's really cool. Before we set this up with Terraterm, because I never knew it was there, it's obviously not been making logs, or has it been making logs and filling up my hard drive somewhere that I need to go and fix?
No, it doesn't log unless you tell it to.
Sure.
This program's been written by people who usually use Linux and stuff, and unintended behaviour is usually a Windows trait, and they don't like that very much.
Oh, and there's a dialog box that's just coming up here on Alter that lets me pause, close, and help. I assume that stops it, maybe, I don't know.
It certainly does, and that dialog box is very handy, and you can pause and resume the logging, and you can close the log, and this is very useful to only log portions of your lab. Now, it's in the end of your alt tab list, and it's very important. And the other thing to keep in mind is that I don't want to read every single thing you type into your lab. Really, I don't. I want you to, after you finish the labs, and believe me, students get really good at this, I want you to trim the logs up and give me relevant information only. I don't have time to read 100K of log data unless it is valid and relevant to the lab. And there's a little incentive to students, if you don't tidy up your logs, I'm going to have a little weekly segment on misspellings that have turned up in log files, and we'll all have a chuckle about how you all typed shot instead of show. So please trim up your log files, and keep the size of your logs down to what is actually pertinent and relevant, because there are quite a number of you, and whilst one or two 100K log files are kind of cool, 100K log files aren't. And more work for you means less work for me, which means more marks for you! So that's how you win on that one. Okay, the other thing that... The other thing to mention about TerraTerm, as Elise aptly pointed out, is there is a help button. Do take a look in there at some point. The help for TerraTerm is actually quite good, and it will tell you things that you never knew. In fact, I learned something last night, which is always good. It actually told me what all the different settings did in the terminal window that I was configuring. So do make use of that help button, and the TerraTerm help is exceedingly useful. Should I shut that door behind me, sweetie? It's getting a bit cold. Okay. Anybody got any questions? Has everybody had enough?
Okay. Is it worth mentioning by default TerraTerm saves its log files in its own directory unless you specifically put it into a directory that you know where it's going to be?
I did actually say that, but we can say it again. By default, TerraTerm logs into C program files TerraTerm Pro. And if you want to know where all your logs went, that's where they did, so you'd better move them.
That's also a notice, I think it was called TerraTerm.log. Now, if I start a new session, now I do actually have one quick question. It depends the file during the current session, but if I was to start a new one, will it...
absolutely.
Blot over the existing file or append to the previous file?
No. Absolutely not. It will append.
Cool.
Logging always appends.
And, oh, that's good.
However, you should probably try and close off your log. Appending means that it's going to tack onto the end of the log file, so stuff you do will turn up at the bottom of the log file. And it's probably good to stop your logging, although keep in mind that once you close all of your TerraTerm windows down, that will result in the log being stopped.
Yep.
Believe me, logging is your friend. You will really get to appreciate logging because you'll be able to look back through what you did on remote bundles and things and actually see what you typed in and what came up, and you'll be able to keep a log of the stuff you've done. And when the remote bundles are...
You can see where you went wrong.
...unavailable, you... That's exactly right. There's another command you should probably know about, Elise, and this sort of... Actually, I'll put this in a Thursday chat, actually. I might put this in... I'll briefly cover it now. Have you ever seen the script command under Linux?
I have, but I've never really done anything with it.
Well, what you can do with the script command is you can go script space foogle.txt, and then you can start executing commands and stuff. And you can actually then drop out of that shell, and it will actually save all of the commands and their output into a text file. And this is also very useful so that, for example, you can send a text file to the Craigry when a set of his commands went horribly wrong.
So could you then maybe clean up the text file, and then, of course, maybe I'll take the output out, I suppose. You could actually turn it into a script and make it executable and have it, assuming it's all right.
Yes, you certainly
you would,
although by the time you finish cleaning up the output out, you may as well have just typed the commands.
Repeat it, yeah.
Yeah, so, and by the time you've done all that, you'd probably just want to put the commands into a file.
Yep. Thanks, Kerry, that's good.
There are other ways of logging, but I'll talk about those in a Thursday chat. For example, Control-A, capital H will turn on hard copy mode in screen, and that will actually log stuff that comes on your terminal as well, and then Control-A, capital H will turn it off again.
Well, you can
and
select
you
all and then copy.
That will work, assuming that the stuff you want to actually copy all fits on the screen. The other thing to realise in TerraTerm, and this will be mentioned in the survival guide, is that because you need to be able to pass control keys through to TerraTerm, such as Control-C, Control-B, Control-V, to actually copy and paste inside of TerraTerm, you need to use Alt-C for copy and Alt-V for paste. Alrighty. Any questions? Left. Otherwise, I think we're finished for today. I'll be on Skype, of course.
Yeah, just with the control, just with the copying and pasting, to select the text or the actual output that you want to copy in another part or another TerraTerm session even. What's the keystroke to do that, sorry?
I'll just visually drag
the mouse, which is a big no-no. Well, it's not a big no-no.
You've got to go into the edit menu in TerraTerm.
To select the text?
Yeah, you just go into the edit menu and then go down to select all and then just then copy and then dump it into a notepad file. Because that's what I did sometimes when I was checking as we're working. I just select it all, it's easier.
Shifting the arrows I don't think works.
No, and I've just selected all and locked it up. Hang on, I've just done a clear screen. I don't know what that's done in this session, but...
No, that's done nothing. Okay, Gerald, Gemma has actually given me the answer. What you actually need to do is you actually need to lock down the left mouse button with insert and numpad slash, and then you need to use the arrow keys to select what you want, and then you need to unlock the mouse button. And really, Dean's method of going edit, select all, and then going Alt-C... and then pasting it into another document is probably going to work out easier if you're going to grab it off the screen.
Depends on what you want to do.
Yeah, you'll get the whole screen, but there's no way to just... Yeah, there is no easy way to select just a couple of lines. Yeah.
My TerraTerm just went dunk, dunk, dunk when I did that, so I said to start another one.
I wonder why. Okay, let's see.
I'll try again with a new session.
Yeah, funnily enough, it worked for me. It doesn't go on dunk, dunk, dunk here.
No, I think Firebot was playing up. Actually, it's quite funny because I selected the whole screen and then I fired another command at it, and you could see it just changing from negative to positive as it's scrolling up.
Yeah, it will certainly do that because it actually sets a change. It highlights it once you've selected it so that you know that what bits are selected, and as you put more onto the screen, bits will scroll off. So, yeah, that's a very good visual clue if you've got enough vision to see that.
Yep.
All right, everybody, that's it for today's lecture. We might as well hit stop. It's been a bit of a wander around the garden path, but I think we've covered some pretty...